This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's podcast is brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who, through your financial support, help keep this podcast going week after week, month after month, and year after year. Yes, we keep moving on, and soon we'll be reaching episode number 600. And I don't see any end in sight yet at this point, so hang with us. I think it's going to be a continued fun ride. I appreciate all of you listeners coming back from week to week when I know you have so many other choices of things that you can do with your time. But I appreciate you being a listener and a supporter here at The Magic Word. Well, this week we're going to introduce you to someone who may not be as well known to you, but hopefully will be after you hear this podcast, because he is someone who has been on Johnny Thompson's radar for a long time, and if he is on his radar, he should be on yours too. This is a gentleman who has kind of reinvented himself from one thing to another, being a popular radio talk show host, more one of those morning talk show kind of funny guys with a lot of funny voices and everything, and then transitioned into becoming a very successful mentalist. As a magician, he has been performing mentalism at casinos, as well as currently having his own one-man show. And he has also cracked the code, I think, for working free shows, that is, charity shows. I mean, how often do we get these opportunities, if you will, quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes here, for these opportunities to perform free shows because, hey, you'll get good exposure. Well, anyhow, we talk about that and how that you can really launch that into a very successful career because some of the shows that you will get as a result of that if you use it right. That's just a very small part of what we talk about this week. A lot of great stories, a lot of great advice, and this gentleman is someone who you should know. If you don't, I hope that you get an opportunity to meet him someplace down the road. The reason you may not know him so well, or if at all, is only because he really hasn't attended magic conventions. He's been working all the time. He's attended a couple of conventions, performed maybe in one or two, but really doesn't sell anything to the magic community and continues to be successful in, again, reinventing himself and finding one stepping stone after another that just seems to lead to one from one success to another. Well, I was going to say I don't want to spend much more time trying to tell you what he's going to say. I'm going to let you hear it from his own lips. So please welcome my good friend here this week, Mr. Dave McGee, here on The Magic Word. Today I am in Dallas, Texas, or actually just a suburb and a short drive away from Dallas up to the northwestern suburb and an area and a beautiful home of our guest here today, Mr. David McGee. And David is someone who you may or may not know. He's one of the fellows that if you know him, you love him. He's been kind of, I say underground, because when he's been in trade shows or working actually as a full-time magician and working in casinos and other kinds of things, and his association with Johnny Thompson and the things they had done together are legendary within the magic community. And those who don't know him are going to learn a lot from this gentleman. I certainly have over the years, and I'm glad to call him my friend. And at the end of this, if you don't know him, you'll be calling him your friend, and you may be even calling him just for the heck of it, just to chat with him, because he's such a great guy. Please welcome my buddy, hey, Dave McGee. Hey, Dave.
Thank you, Scott. I like that intro. A lot of you probably don't know Dave. If you know him, you like him. You didn't finish that. Probably if some people that know him can't stand him. Yeah, there you go.
But one of the things that comes to mind that you had taught me early on, and I want to get kind of talking about this up front, and that has to do with working for nonprofits and for organizations. We get calls all the time for charity shows and saying, well, we don't have a lot of money, or that this is a charity, sure, and that we're going to only have a few hundred dollars, if that, right, or can you do this? And, quote, you'll get a lot of exposure. Well, yeah, of course, then you can freeze to death from overexposure
exactly,
as well. And so you had taught me way back when that exposure is a good thing in the right place and for the right organization at the right time and place. place because of what it can get you. And it has gotten you to where you are today in small part, or maybe a large part, because of those wise decisions. So can you kind of impart some of the knowledge to, again, to me, to remind me and also others?
Well, it's going to sound a little self-serving, and it very well might have been. I look back on it. I certainly didn't mean it to be that way. But I was very fortunate in the, I guess, late 80s or early 90s or so to be at a golf tournament locally. A friend of mine had asked me to come to. It was a celebrity golf tournament by Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
And that's where
the baseball team. Okay, not the actual.
That's back when Bush was involved.
GW, yeah.
And he happened to listen and was a big fan of a character that I did on the radio. We'll talk about that later on. But and he loved that. And so they asked me to come in and do something. They didn't know I did magic. And I said, well, you know, I do sleight of hand. Oh, we can have you do that at the event for some of the folks sitting around after golf. Because, you know, golf and cards just really kind of go together.
They do.
It's raining and people come in and gamble. So anyway, I went in and did this, and I met a lot of guys, Pudge Rodriguez, Jose, I can't remember.
Canseco.
I met a lot of great guys. Nolan Ryan and I, we got to be over the years, have gotten to be very close with Nolan and Ruth and their family. Wonderful people. So I met a gentleman there by the name of Burton Gilliam. Now, a lot of people know that name. They're not sure, but Burton was the guy that actually, first of all, originated, after he became famous, the line for Pace Picante sauce that says, New York City, get a rope, those big old teeth. Well, he did that as their icon for years. Uh-huh. But he did that because of his fame from Blazing Saddles with Mel Brooks. And has a great story. If you ever get a chance to look it up, it's a great story how he started out as a Dallas fireman, went into the movies. First movie was Paper Moon with Ryan O'Neal's daughter, Tatum O'Neal.
So he's actually from the Dallas area?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
He was
that.
A fireman. Yeah, his brother was a fireman. His dad was a fireman. I mean, the whole family are firemen. So when he left that, it was just like heartbreaking for their family. But anyway, so I met Burton. Well, we hit it off big time. And we became like best buddies. And he was asked to all of these big celebrity events. And when he would go, he'd say, you know, I got a friend of mine, David McGee, and he is the best in the world at what he does. You just got to see him. I mean, he is good. And I was like, well, thanks, Bubba. So he'd get me to these deals. Well, they'd seen comics and had bands, but they never had anybody do, quote, mentalism.
Right.
And it just fried people. So the next thing you know, we're in Carmel and we're at Clint Eastwood's deal. And, you know, he comes up and he sees me. He goes, you know, and the time he was married to that lady that did the television news, the dark-haired lady. She's a beautiful woman. They're since divorced, the last woman he was married to. But, you know, he came up, and he was the mayor of Carmel, and he came up to me that day.
Clint Eastwood. Yeah.
And he said to me, kid, you're good. He said, you want to come do my other golf tournament out here? And I said, yeah, I'd love to, sir. You know, met him. Well, then the doors start opening. Samuel L. Jackson. Sam wanted me to do his. Patrick Warburton, who's well known as Tick Man or Putty. He also plays on The Family Guy, you know, the guy in the wheelchair.
He was on Seinfeld.
And it was on Seinfeld as Putty. Great actor. He does all those Hertz commercials now, I think. And so just started growing. And then next thing I went to one out with John Daly, the golfer. Then I started doing a lot of the golfing ones. And so, again, it sounded self-serving, but I realized I would meet these people. And what I would start doing early on was I would get them to give me a testimonial, right?
Yeah, right. Video.
And a video.
Yeah.
Not, and we'll talk about that too.
Okay.
Because I have, you know, some ideas on these things. So a video. And I'd say, look, you know, I came and I'm doing your thing and I didn't charge you. You paid my airfare, my hotel, and treated me great like a king. I've met all these folks. And would you do me a favor and give me a testimonial? Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, so I've got all these great names, anywhere from bands to Kiss to all these great iconic people I was fortunate enough to meet. So I kept them over the years. And it's funny, my buddy Harrison Carroll in Buffalo, who is my business mentor in the trade show industry, always used to tell me way back then, he said, Dave, you know, you're in trade shows. Yeah, if you're going to do a testimonial, get it from like Bill Gates or somebody in business, you know. And I said, well,
because you want to get jobs with the corporations.
Those kind
who
of
are
corporations.
Paying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the celebrities are not going to be the ones hiring.
No.
You. It's going to be the corporations.
But he later came to me and he said, you know what? You saw the transition in that the world was going towards this reality stuff.
Well, that's what Uri Geller did, of course. Uri would go in. He wanted, I think, eventually say, when people would say, who is that with Marilyn Monroe or whomever?
Right.
And to, later said, who is that with Uri?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So I started seeing that. And, you know, it became very important to me, or it didn't become important to me, to be a big name in magic. Because I realized,
yeah,
and you know me, I always shoot them straight. That's the one thing I think you probably always held off for. Yeah. Like, but Johnny told me this a long time ago. He said, you know, I said, Johnny, I'd like to, you know, get a little known in the magic.
Johnny Thompson, by the way.
Johnny Thompson, yeah. Yes. And he said, Dave, listen to me, pal. Just do what you're doing. Magicians are cheap. They don't pay anything. So I said, wow, okay. Because, yeah, I think these guys are making a fortune at these, yeah, these doing these conventions. But I said, okay. But I still loved seeing all the guys and getting to know them over the years. And I really got to know the workers in the trade show industry. Paul Gertner, you know, Bob Kohler, Harrison, all those guys, Charles Green, mm-hmm, Danny Orleans, that would work
Seth
that
Kramer.
Seth Kramer, yeah, all those, you know, the names that were working those shows. But then I got to know a lot of these guys that nobody knew, like Billy Harris at Hollywood, California. Mm-hmm. Now, Billy, nobody knows Billy. Billy's one of the biggest names in the cuisine and the restaurant industry now. He MCs, mm-hmm, does a little bit of magic, but really got away from it. He was doing magic at the trade shows.
Yeah.
So I built this whole thing where these guys were knowing me now, and when I'd go to an event, somebody would come up to me and be like, hi, I'm Denise, and I'm Mr. Pacino's assistant, and he does a fundraiser each year at his home where he has 50 people come in, and they charge $10,000, and he's got a 6,000-square-foot condo that overlooks Central Park, and he has Gordon Ramsay this year coming in. Last year it was Gina De Laurentiis, and he has a little theater, and he'd like you to do your thing there for them.
Yeah.
For these, would you be interested in, for the arts, the kids? I said, oh, yeah, I'd probably make time for that.
For Al, yeah.
Yeah, and then when you see him, and then the next year he introduces you, and he goes, you're doing close-up, and he says to the people, I mean, you're looking around the room, and it's these names like Martin Scorsese. I mean, these people are like, yeah, really?
Robert De Niro.
Who am I?
Yeah.
You know? And I never did see De Niro there.
Oh.
But, you know, he would say, so graciously, he'd say, you know, bring me in there, and he'd say, okay, that was a wonderful dinner, but this is what nightmares are made of. You know, that was his intro. And he goes, this man is crazy. Do your stuff, Dave. Come on, do it. You know, and he loved the coins, like the coins to the table thing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That was probably his one, his favorite,
yeah,
thing. But I did it a completely different way.
But the kinds of shows that you did, again, that were the charity shows, that the advice to me was don't necessarily, well, you can if you want,
yeah,
do the local shows that are going to be,
sure,
something that's going to raise money for the local Humane Society,
sure,
or something like that, or PTA or something. But really think big for those larger things like the JREF, you know, that is going to be a foundations for cancer for kids, or Make a Wish,
absolutely,
or something that's on a national schedule scale, because they have the larger corporations who donate the larger amount of money, and they have the big rollers who are there, and they will also, as you say, hire those other people,
absolutely,
who are celebrities to come in, and that's whenever that you start hobnobbing with them and you're on their level.
Well, and it's strange too, because for instance, in coming up in April, when what I've done now, this will be the 11th or 12th year.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, you can look it up online. It's the Celebration Exotic Car Festival.
Okay.
And it's a 3-day event. And that's where I got to be very wonderful friends with Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
Right. And Carl introduced me to Sylvester and all these different people from there.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like, you know, it goes out. Well, I met him, Christopher McDonald, and they bring in one night at Styx. Last year it was Steve Martin and Martin Short came in and did a thing.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here looking around at these people and you're going, man, I'm a nobody. But they don't look at you like that. When,
yeah,
you get up and do your deal,
yeah,
and like last year I put on a variety show and we brought in Paul Ponce with the Juggler with the Hats from,
oh,
Magic,
yeah,
Live, my,
yeah,
wonderful friend,
mm-hmm,
opens for us at the casino. And then we brought in, who was it? Christopher Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And to finish the show, and I emceed, and then we had Pasha Nalona from the Quick Change Artist.
Oh, yeah.
And now this year we were going to do it with myself, Henry Cho, and Charlie Fry and Company.
Mm-hmm.
But it got Corona, yeah, canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, it gives me a chance to bring my friends in and let them be seen and enjoy the 3 days too. And just
sure.
Five-star hotel, five-star food, pay for your airfare. Do I charge them? No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, if you could be on the Tonight Show and make $750, you'd pay them the $750
that's
just
correct.
To be on there.
That's true.
You know? So this is opening so many doors. So that's why I say, yeah, you start with the smaller and the local, and you get where people are like, you know, they tell you this stuff about exposure, and you say, look, don't worry about that. It's, if it helps you, just be humble
right.
about it.
That's right.
You know, I've had guys.
I'd rather give my fee of $200 or whatever they're going to give it back to them. Say, just keep that.
Well, people all the time will say to me, I've heard magicians go, well, they pay anything? I said, no. Well, I don't give away what I sell.
All right.
Well, you go ahead. Enjoy your
life. I don't have to compete with
enjoy
you then.
Enjoy yourself. Yeah. Enjoy yourself. And then they come to you later and go, man, how do you get all these pictures with in these videos with these guys? I said, because I've worked with them. And they say that I'm willing to do it.
Yeah.
Plus, I want to give back. Mm-hmm. And I always also, one of the things that I do is we always give away a dinner, and I'll do the auction of the things, and I made it clear with the castle, mm-hmm. and these people away get $5,000, and they get to go to Jay Leno's garage that day, and then that night they get to go to
the Magic Castle. Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. it, and it puts a spotlight on the castle.
Right.
I've had people come to me and go, I'd never heard of that place, mm-hmm. but I sure want to go back.
Want to join, yeah.
Yeah, or join.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've had one couple that did join, actually, lived out in L.A.
Now, you're talking about testimonials, so obviously you want to get like a video testimonial. What are your thoughts on
that? Well, my thoughts on that were this. Over the years, I saw a lot of videos with trade shows and other things, and I would hear voiceover guys on the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have a picture, or not even a picture, and it would say, Dom DeLuise said, so-and-so is the greatest he's ever seen.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Then the other one would be, some of them, bang, bang, bang. Okay, well, you five of them on there. Some voiceover guys saying it, and it would come up in print.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. Anybody can do that.
Yeah.
What I wanted to do was, all of a sudden, it comes on, and it's bang. Hey, this is Rodney Dangerfield, you know? I saw Dave McGee. Holy smoke, you know, this kid, he's the Sam Kinison of magic, you know? And so, bang, you got that. People are like, holy smoke. And then you get Terry Bradshaw. Then you got Nolan Ryan. Then you got Carl Weathers and Shooter McGavin.
Yeah.
You know, you got my buddy Chris McDonald.
Yeah.
So you get these names, and you got Pacino. You know, they see a Pacino on there. You know, he's going, oh, you got to get Dave. He's the man. You know, and you got this, and people are going, holy smoke. Now, let me tell you what can bite you. I actually, one time, Barbara sent one off to a client.
Your wife, Barbara.
My wife, Barbara, who handles all my business and is why I'm where I'm at, because I couldn't have been without her, which remind me to tell you a story about Kathy in a minute. And I've never told you.
Okay.
And she sent it off, and we didn't hear for 2 or 3 weeks. This big company, a big corporation. And finally, she followed up with them. This was 8 or 9 years ago. And she said, we never heard back from you guys. We were just curious. Was everything, oh, yeah, we got the promo, and we saw the promo, and we just realized
we can't afford him. Yeah.
And Barbara goes, did we give you a price?
Yeah.
And she goes, no. And she goes, what's the price? Barbara gave her the price. It was still, you know, fine. Mm-hmm. But she was like, Oh, well then, yeah, let me talk to the board. But we ended up getting it. And they told us.
Yeah.
Now, here's the crazy thing. When I got there, the guy said to me, you should be charging double. I'm like, really? Tell your assistant that,
that's
please.
Right.
You know? And
yeah, I made that mistake then once whenever that I had. And you always hate that. Whenever you quote a price, whoever quotes first loses in negotiations. Let me just say that. And that was a case in which that I quoted. I thought a pretty high price. I said, is that all? No problem. It's like, of course, I have negotiating techniques, but I can also bring this, and I can add this, and then have other kinds of, okay, we can do that too. And of course, there's going to be other things on top of that for my lodging, travel, and other things. But
I'll tell you this, though, I don't forget, because this is important. I've never talked to you about this, told you about it. But, you know, being in Texas, of course, being friends on Facebook, I always followed it, and like I do a lot of people. But I saw the whole situation, you know, with Kathy, with your wife, and
brain cancer.
Yeah, the cancer and the whole situation. And then when she passed away, and I saw that, and I watched it through that whole deal. Just, you know, it's just, what can you do? Just, you know, except
thank you.
Less than prayer. And, but I will tell you this, and I never said this. When you did, as you being a magician, I looked at that, and I know that we probably paralleled each other in a lot of ways. Your wife was, I don't know if she was or not involved with what you did, but my wife was really more than when we started the with the show up at the Windstar at the casino. Mm-hmm. And we brought Johnny on, and Johnny just fell in love with Barbara. He said she was probably the most creative woman that he had ever met because she builds all the sets, does all the stuff.
Well, there have been magicians said about Kathy being creative, like Dan Garrett and others said, she is so funny, I should just follow her around with a pencil and paper.
And she probably supported you.
Oh, well, she insisted to be on stage and things.
Yeah, and assisted you. And probably
we did cruise
you
ships and stuff. She worked with me. Yeah.
And so, you know, when that happened to you, I really stopped. I can seriously remember one day thinking, wow. You know, that could be very easily been me and my wife, my situation.
Could be anybody.
And it just really affected me to the point where I said, I've got to stop and just be really, really thankful. Because I'm going to tell you, I would not be where I am in my business or financially or anything without him. And I couldn't even, to make it a downer, but I mean, I just couldn't even imagine.
I
want you to know that there's always something that affects somebody. Even something like a death, too. And it had a real profound effect on me when I thought about it. And I thought, man. And from that day on, I really, really looked at her in a lot different way. I really did.
Well, thank you. We had 43 years together. And again, I look at it from the positive standpoint of there are others who had a lot less. And even during some of those years that some people have had that they weren't good years, but all of ours were. And I'm glad we had the 43 rather than pining about the years we didn't have and the things we didn't do. I'm so happy and thankful for those that we did have.
Absolutely.
And so I always look at it from that standpoint. So thank you, Dave. Appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely.
You always want to try to inspire somebody in some way. You never know how the ripple effects of anything that you do throughout your life then really too. You had mentioned about, I know, on going into casinos and everything. How did you first get connected with Johnny?
Well, here's what's strange. I was in, I used to do the trade shows where a lot of them in Vegas.
Yes.
So I went in and just called him one day.
Out of the blue.
Yeah. Well, I did some character voices and some things in the radio, mm-hmm. and he loved them.
Which radio station? You work here in Dallas?
KSCS was at Dallas where I started. Okay. I started doing a character called The Deacon from the Mount Rylan Baptist Church in Flower Mound. Okay. And it was a fictitious character, and I did it as a joke to a comic friend that was a sidekick on the show here.
And you're from Louisiana originally, of course.
Originally from Louisiana.
So that accent, by the way, you folks are listening to as a Louisiana.
Yeah, the guy had a real raspy voice like that. It was an old deacon. And so long story short, I did it. It ran for 20 years. We started on KSCS. Wow. Opened me up to the whole country art. Now, here's another crazy avenue. So one year I get a call from Bob Kingsley. Bob Kingsley was the Casey Kasem of Country Countdown.
Okay.
Worldwide. And Bob had this real, you know, it's just the American Country Countdown with Bob Kingsley. And he had this great voice. Well, Bob said, Dave, we go to a thing called Country Radio Seminar every year in Nashville. Uh-huh. And where we have people come in, all the big artists come in our room and they play guitar in the evening. And we have a hospitality suite. He said, I wanted to do something different. Could we hire you to come in and we put a blackjack table up and nobody would be doing anything like this? He was a visionary.
Yeah.
And he said...
what year would this have been approximately?
Oh, my word.
70s, 80s?
Oh, no. This was in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah. And he goes, come in. Early nights. He goes, come in. We'll do it. And blah, blah. So I'm sitting there one night and I look up. And I'm doing this to these and this is where all the top DJs in the country came. And they would do this kind of stuff. They would get one-liners. Like, they would be in one big room one day, and it was called Come Get Your Liners. Mm-hmm. And they'd all have these booths. And it would be KWKH in Shreveport, and they would have Garth Brooks by. So Garth would sit in front, and he'd say, hey, this is Garth Brooks, and I love listening to KWKH in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Right.
Those are the liners
little PSAs,
and stuff. And then he'd go to the next one, little PSA, go to the next one. So all the names were doing it. So that night I look up, and off to my left is Alan Jackson, Kenny Chesney, Reba McEntire, and a girl named Mindy McCready, who was a big country artist at the time.
Okay.
Then I met a guy named Mark Wills. And I got to know all these people. Well, then I was doing the radio character voice, and it was on about 25 stations at the time. Wow. Eventually, we had 55 nationally syndicated.
Wow.
And so we're all over the country. We're doing this stuff. And guy nudges me after I finish my set. And he goes, so you're the deacon. I said, yeah. He goes, wow, you're not what I thought you were. He goes, you are hilarious. He says, my wife and I listen to you all the time. It was Tim McGraw, Faith Hill. Hmm. At the time, they were traveling around with George Strait.
Strait, yeah, on the
so
bus.
I got to be really good friends with George's road manager, Tommy Foote, who lives down in San Marcos.
Okay.
And has had me to do some big events down there, put on some events where I got to bring in Chris and Michael Goudeau and a bunch of other people to do some variety shows for him. So anyway, I say all that to say that was another avenue, right? Mm-hmm. So that brought me in to meeting all these country artists.
And you were doing magic at the time and mentalism.
Doing magic and
magic
mentalism.
Magic or mentalism or both?
Both. Okay. Yeah. But I really drifted 100% more into mentalism.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah. All right, later on. So all these doors are opening. And I'm getting, you know, these people would come to town. And I'd get a call. Hey, Dave, it's Tim. Listen, my grandparents are coming over from Monroe. Would you come? We're doing the George Strait out at the...
Monroe.
Monroe.
Yeah.
That's right.
I
Rustin Monroe. That's right. And he says, would you come do some stuff, my grandpa? Well, I'd love to see you. Well, you know, I'll give you some tickets to the show. I was like, I don't need to. I just love to see you.
Sure.
I'd come in. Barbara and I go down there. And, you know, she loved country music. And I'd sit in there and do stuff for them, and then met George, got to know George and Norma, his wife. And it's just the most bizarre thing because I'm a nobody. And I'm looking around going, how did this happen?
Yeah, what's wrong with this picture?
How
am I?
This? But they treat you because it's the arts. That's the thing that I love. They treat you like you're one of them. Mm-hmm. And there's no looking at each other like, you're Tim McGraw.
That's interesting because I remember Max Maven saying many years ago about how that magicians, regardless of their level, feel as if afterwards they can go backstage and talk to the magician or whoever that it might be, if Siegfried and Roy or Penn and Teller or whomever. However, that whenever the Frank Sinatra or Sammy Davis Jr. or someone else of the classics, let's say, or someone who is well known, Adele even, or Madonna, who goes backstage saying, hey, I'm a singer too, I'm like you, and whereas magicians will accept each other,
absolutely.
I don't think that other arts do the same. So it's interesting that you say
it's
that
more of a brotherhood.
Yeah, but you're
sisterhood, brotherhood.
Yeah, yeah. But you're saying though that they had accepted you and they were really artists also, but a different kind of artist.
So, well, they respect what you do because
they sit there and they're
just mind blown. Well, you know what reaction we all get, but it's what you do from there. You know?
So that way they do respect you. It's not like Dance Monkey, show us a trick while you're here.
No. They never would do.
Right.
They'd always bring you in. There was an introduction to their family, how you met. He's a wonderful friend of mine, and I wanted you to see his talent and his gift and what he does. And, I mean, you know, their grandson's Tim McGraw, and he's wanting you to do stuff for them. And he's sitting in there just, you know, like a kid. You know, watch this. You're not going to believe this. Okay, watch this. And, you know,
like that.
And you're thinking to
sure.
yourself, holy smoke, these fans are out here waiting on this guy, and I'm sitting in there, and he's sitting there watching me like I'm the star. What is wrong with this? But it's a very it's easy
thing.
To get wrapped up, too, in the ego part of it, you know? That can happen. And Barbara kept me grounded on that area, too. She, you know, we'd walk out of there, and she'd go, okay.
So you were in Vegas, and that you called up Johnny.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you for getting me on track, ADD. And so I called him up, and we started talking, and we would meet and have dinner. We'd talk about stuff. You know, we'd do the voices. And every time I called Johnny and Pam, I'd do a voice and Jack, and I'd get him totally. As some magician from India or some guy.
Yeah.
And so Johnny says, he came to watch me do a trade show. And I won't say who, but a famous...
trade show magician?
No, a famous famous
magician in Vegas on the Strip?
No, a famous magician that was an editor of a magazine.
Okay. That narrows it down.
That was not in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Had asked Johnny to go in and look at a couple of performers.
Yeah.
And help him out. And Johnny went and he watched him and he came back over to me. He goes, I can't help them, Dave. They don't have it. And I was like, what? He goes, you know, when you watch you got improv. You look like it's off the cuff. And I said, well, thanks, man. That was the greatest compliment in the world.
Sure.
Because he couldn't compliment me on my magic because I wasn't any good. And so in my eyes, but he says, you know, you improv. So we just kept building. And I said to him one day, and he remembered this. I said to him one day I'm going to have a show and I'm going to have you as a consultant. And I'd always say that, and he'd laugh, and he'd pat me on the back. And I said later on to him, I said, you know, Johnny, I bet you walked off and thought, yeah, kid, I hear that from everybody.
Sure.
But I knew it. I knew it in my heart. I didn't know how. So when this thing came and I met, what happened, the way I got the casino deal, I'll do it brief. I had a guy that was, quote, using me He was my agent here in town.
Okay.
And he wanted to get a percentage and this and that. And I said, okay, whatever you want to do. He said, we're going to go have a meeting with this casino, Windstar. They're slowly becoming one of the largest in the country. Mm-hmm. I said, Indian. He said, yeah. India Casino's off the strip.
Yeah.
So we went there, met with the guy and the lady that was in charge of booking everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished, blew him away. Met in a coffee shop.
They're Native Americans also? They were
No, neither one of them were. They just worked for the casino.
Oh, okay.
And she was married to a Native American who was a legislator, who was like the top guys of the tribe. There's eight of those or something, and the governor. And he said, the guy says, man, it's just unbelievable. I've never seen anything like this, you know. And she, the lady said, well, this is amazing. She said, you know, unfortunately, I'm leaving this week here. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, we just wasted all this time.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? So she goes, but I want your info. So I went back. 4 days later, she calls me. And she goes, look, I didn't want to say anything in front of the guy, Brian. She said, but I was leaving to do my own consulting with the tribe.
Oh, she's leaving.
I'm leaving to be a consultant with the tribe because I can do more there.
Yeah.
But I've never seen anything like what you do in your personality. She says, it's contagious. She says, I got to see more.
Yeah.
So we talked. We put together a deal that we came up with an idea. She says, I want to put you in front of 3,000 people. I went, wow, great. She said, but not doing this, but that'll be the bridge to the gap. First thing, I almost turned her down and said, no, I'm not. We came up with a game show.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, but because here's all they were doing. They were spinning a deal for all their winners that had won over 3 months, and they were spinning this big hopper.
Like a
and
mango then reaching, machine or
something.
Yeah,
people were coming in and leaving just so bored. Oh, Jonathan, you just won 500 in credit or $1,000.
Yeah.
We said, there's got to be a better way. All of them were doing that. So we came up with the World's Game Show.
Mm-hmm.
I called Johnny, and I said, we want to add in magic to this. How do we do it? Flew out, got a room at the Mirage. Stayed in there for 3 days, a suite, the three of us.
Okay.
And worked this whole show out.
You and Johnny and who?
And Michelle, my business partner, Michelle Colbert. And the next thing you know, we do it. It became the biggest day of profit in the history of the casino.
Goodness sakes.
We quadrupled.
And they stayed for the whole show, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Even after they won, they wanted to stay to see what else was happening.
Yeah, it was an hour and something. We brought in these gamers. We only did one show. They came to us and
these are the high rollers too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one, we had about 2,000 people.
And everybody's guaranteed a prize.
No, it's just like a regular game show.
Oh, okay.
They have about 25 winners.
Oh, okay.
But there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And you can go on www.worldsgameshow and check it out. Mm-hmm. And there's stuff for Johnny on there. And so anyway, we worked in magic with it. So the magic would incorporate into the game. And it had to be on the up and up. And
of course,
because of the Gaming Commission,
sure.
Which, so we had to do that. So having said that, Johnny got involved and we just made it. We kept making. So one day Johnny told me he was going to retire and he was doing a thing for Stan at Magic Live.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Johnny, I have an idea.
Oh, he was going to retire his act. I remember that. Yeah.
I said, Johnny, I have an idea. He said, what? I said, let's start doing an opening act for the beginning. Let's make it like a show in Vegas. He goes, Dave, that's brilliant. Of course, Johnny thought of that later.
Why did we have an opening act, Dave?
Anybody fielding will know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So Johnny says, great. And so we do it. And Johnny went and did the magic light, but that was for magicians.
Right.
So the last time Johnny got paid to perform legitimately, last for layman.
Because I know I always said, this is the last time. This is the last time.
No, was on our stage.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know he did something for Jay Marshall, Jay, his son.
Yeah.
Sandy Marshall. But this was the real paid, you know.
Yeah.
We had, and there were 3,000 people in the audience, and they went berserk. Johnny did the cellophane dove. And it just, they went berserk. Standing ovation.
Yeah.
And so then we started bringing in. So I went at the Magic Live, and I saw Paul Ponce.
Mm-hmm.
Who
the juggler.
We have Fantastic. Become the best of friends. You know, that's who we go to Cancun once a year with for a month down there, opened that door for us.
Yeah.
And we brought Michael Goudeau, Michael Finney.
Yeah.
So we brought the
first name needs to be Michael, I guess, to get
Yes, him. Michael Finney, that's right.
I mean, you need to have first name of Michael Goudeau. But yeah,
Michael Goudeau, and Goudeau came. So we brought in a lot of great, the Alante Dogs. That won America's Got Talents.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was fantastic. So now it's like a real show. And we'd have 3,200 people there packed in. And so it was just absolutely fantastic. And that's what we did. We worked this thing. Then I started doing VIP shows for the casinos. Then we picked up the Riverwind Casino. And then we picked up another casino in Tulsa right before COVID. Mm-hmm. So after that's over, we'll actually have three places now.
All in Oklahoma.
Yeah, all in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you think can be replicated in other states?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. That's why we started the website. And mm-hmm. Before Johnny had passed, our goal was to have five or six total. Because okay. really all we'd have the time to do. Because we do eight shows.
But would
shows
you be doing
year,
those, or would they have one person at each of these
oh,
other
no,
casinos?
No, it'd just like, be me.
Okay.
Yeah. As much as possible. And mm-hmm. what our goal is to grow it and then just and to sell it.
Because those shows that you're doing are quarterly?
Yes.
At
we
Windstar?
Do eight a year.
Mm-hmm.
Eight
oh,
of
eight,
year
okay.
at each mm-hmm. casino.
So about bi-monthly or so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and it's huge. We own 8 of the 10 largest revenue nights in the history of the casino.
Now, when you say revenue, it's because those are, first of all, you're bringing in all the high rollers.
Well,
you're 3,000 people, and so those are the people with
the
money.
Here's the thing. When Pitbull would come and they bring him in to do a show,
yeah.
about 80% of those people are from Dallas, Fort Worth, younger people. Mm-hmm. They're not players, and they leave after the show.
They just come for the show.
So they're draws.
Yeah.
Our people were 3,000 on a Friday and 3,000 on a Saturday. So Friday night, you would have 6,000 high rollers in there spending the night, two nights. And they're just they're all players. Because they get a ticket, and they get to bring a guest. Mm-hmm. And use it to spouse and their players too. Mm-hmm. So these were all legitimate high roller players.
Yeah.
So
they're really not advertising you the way they would Pitbull, because Pitbull they'd open
no,
the public. This is a
in-house.
Private. This is a private event.
Yeah. It yeah. was an invite.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They'd yeah. give them a room.
Yeah.
And they'd say come to the show, and you know we'd give 10 grand away. We'd give 100 grand. I think it was total was potential 400,000.
Yeah.
Cars. You know, BMWs, yeah. Mercedes.
So I can see why they would do that so many times a year. The more often, obviously,
oh,
that they was
wow.
like, yeah.
Oh, it was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it was the greatest thing. Johnny, every time he'd leave, he'd put his hands on each side of my face. Yeah. And anybody that knew Johnny knew this. And he'd give me a kiss.
Give you a kiss, right.
Yeah. And he'd look at me and he'd say, you know, pal, we've really got something here. We really have. We've done something really amazing. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, we have. And he said, you were a huge, huge part of it.
And even though he had retired as act, he didn't retire as consulting. That was kind of the
no.
last thing he ended up doing.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm, all the way through.
And it was a joy for me to be able to have Johnny come in, hire him, and pay him well to come in and do what he did, just like he did for Penn & Teller
yeah.
consulting.
What's one of your favorite stories about Johnny? I know
one
you
of
got
my favorite
a bunch.
Stories?
Yeah.
I think I've told it probably before.
Yeah.
But it was when he was staying here at the house.
Okay.
And he told me, he said, He said, Dave, what time are we having rehearsal?
Oh, yeah.
And I said, tomorrow at 9. He goes, oh, my God. He was a night person.
Yeah.
Get me up at 7 or 6. I went, 6? It's 3 hours. Yeah, it takes me a while. And he went to close the door, and he opened it up, and he looked at me. He goes, hey, Dave, you do know this is a piece, right? Pointed at his hair, and I went,
yeah.
Really? So, yeah. He says, don't be surprised when you wake up and come get me tomorrow if I look like Peter Boyle. And I went, what the heck does that mean? Go in the next day, knock on the door, no answer. Knock on the door. He slept with the TV on because
okay.
they were performing people in hotels,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
No, knock on the door. Finally, he opens the no, he doesn't open the door. I'm like, oh, no, Johnny's died. What am I going to ever get? I'll
house.
Be known as the guy.
Yeah.
So I open the door, and Johnny's laying in there like he slept in the buff.
Yeah.
On top of the covers.
Yeah.
And I was like, had his CPAC machine going. I said, Johnny, oh, yeah, pal. So I closed the door. He got dressed, put a towel on, a robe, and he came to the door to get his coffee. Always made his coffee. And he always drank it about an inch of coffee and the rest milk. And I'd always ask him, Johnny, why do you drink it?
I like my coffee Boston style.
I don't know what that meant
Boston
to this
style.
Day. What does that mean?
I don't know.
It's milk style.
Yeah.
And so I gave it to him. And he looked at me, and I just died laughing. He goes, what are you laughing at? I said, you do look just like Peter Boyle. He didn't have the hair, the teeth, anything. And he goes, get out of here, you. Yeah. And so, yeah, I loved him. I absolutely loved him. And I'm going to tell you something that's going to blow, and I've said this before too, blow magicians' minds. Of the 8 times a year for over 12 years that he came in here and stayed, mm-hmm. he'd come a day early, stay here, have dinner, relax. Go to the casino, rehearse a day, have 2 days of shows, and then I'd take him home, bring him home, spend the night here, and then leave on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And of those, all those years, 8 times, I think maybe, except for the casino when we worked on a prop, sleight of hand or sessions, as most guys call it, we might have had one.
Really?
I never pushed him for that. Was not my relationship. Yeah. I didn't want. And he asked me one time. He said, "You know, Dave, you've never." I said, "You know why? I love you, and I love hearing the stories." We would sit out here for hours, and I had a tape recorder, and we would talk about things and family and wives and kids, and it was a lot of heartache.
Yeah,
you know, I don't talk about a lot of that stuff, but Johnny had a wonderful life, but he had a heartbroken life too.
Yeah,
in
he
many
did.
Aspects.
I know because Pam wasn't his first wife.
Yeah,
I know he had other kids. Another
some of the stories about that. One of those wives is, gosh, it's crazy.
Well,
and you know, to hear the things and hear the way back of fathers and birth parents and stuff that he never, you know, some people knew about.
Yeah.
But there were some stories that were the same stories. Oh, I heard the stories about him playing spades in cards with the Mills brothers and how he worked with them and opened with them, doing the harmonica cats. And, you know, my father was a harmonica player and played for Johnny one night. And I played. My dad taught me.
Yeah.
And I'd play for him. And he was going, like, Dave, I never knew you did. You know, he helped me with the music piece that I do in the show, The Human Jukebox. And, he loved it. He goes, nobody else is doing that. And I don't know if that's true. I don't think there are.
Yeah.
But the way we do it, you know, and it, I think, is really different. You know, we work with Craig on that, you know. And
yep, like that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's different.
I know that also he had worked in shows where that they were clubs in Chicago owned by the mafia and all that. So
I worked at this club, and he'd do the thing.
Push his nose and his ear.
Sign outside, you know, move his nose to the side and his ear to the other.
Yeah.
And he had all his Kennedy conspiracy stuff that he had about the magician that left Chicago and changed his name.
I hadn't heard that one. I thought I heard
he's that very famous magician, and now it's completely escaped.
Tony Andreuzzi?
Yes.
Okay, I know that story.
Yes, great story.
Well, Walter Blaney told us in great detail in one of our earlier episodes.
And
listened to the Kennedy conspiracy, and when they called him and said, don't deliver the letter.
Don't deliver the letter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Tony, and he changed his name. I can't remember.
From Tony Andreuzzi to
something else, and I can't remember what it was. But I heard all the old, you know.
Well, Tony was the one who had inspired Johnny to do his act with the fly, with the
there's so many.
The birds and the comedy stuff.
Things Johnny would tell me, like, you know, Dave, I taught Arsenio Hall, the birds. I taught, and I was like, oh, my Lord.
You know, the Markham's wife, Gloria, was married to Tony Andreuzzi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before she married Dan
Markham.
And I thought Johnny was just yanking my chain. And then one night I get a call, and he said, Penn and Teller are going to be on tonight. Watch Arsenio on his second revival. He came back.
Yeah.
And Penn comes out, and he says, I want you to meet somebody that you've known a long time. And he comes out, and Arsenio just almost had a stroke. Oh, my Tom Sony.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Yeah. Everything, because, you know, it's.
Was Arsenio at his funeral? Did he come?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
But Donnie, a lot of people didn't know, Donnie Osmond sat right behind me.
Tell me that story, because you said.
I went to, I knew Donnie because I'd been on their show when Dick Clark had it out, their show he and Marie had.
Uh-huh.
And I got to do that show with Mike Douglas, the talk show host, and Susan, what's her name, medicine woman, MD or whatever. I can't remember her. I'm losing my mind. I can't remember her name. Beautiful lady. But anyway, long brown hair. She was muted.
She didn't do the Thigh Master thing, was she?
No.
Wasn't on Three's Company?
No, that was Suzanne Summers.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't remember her name. But anyway, beautiful lady. And we did that show with them. And I taught Donnie a trick off camera because he loved magic. He had grandkids. So he pats me on the back and he goes, hey, buddy. And I turned around. I went, Donnie, what are you doing here? Well, about that time, the girl came and tapped me on the shoulder. It was my turn to talk.
Yeah.
After, I think, Copperfield or somebody, whoever it was ahead of me. And I went up and spoke, you know, which was a great honor for me. But so I come out, and he was leaving to go to rehearsal. And
Donnie
I saw him
was.
In the foyer. Yeah, Donnie. And he gave me a big hug, and he goes, dude, you had Johnny perfect. He goes, I was dying laughing. He says, I got to go to rehearsal. I said, how did you know Tom Sony? He looked at me, he goes, everybody in entertainment knew Tom Sony.
That's great.
And it was very true. I talked to people time after time after time that knew Johnny, and it just blew my mind.
Well, now, Johnny also did trade shows. Did he help you with some of your trade shows?
He helped me with some of the ideas on this stuff. The greatest compliment he ever gave me was the improv thing. He said, Dave, he said, your ability to improv is unbelievable. He said, it's the best I've ever seen. In fact, one night I heard him when we first did our promo show to bring the casino in at Grapevine at one of the theaters to give him an idea what I did. And he went in the bedroom, he spoke loud, and he closed the door and he talked to Pam and he says, "Hey, honey," he goes, "oh, we've got a real hit. Oh, my gosh." He says, I sat back there in that crow's nest in the sound and I laughed so hard. Mm-hmm. He does voices, he does, and his improv is so, he just goes way out. And I was like, wow, that's the greatest compliment he could have given me in the world. Yeah. I didn't care. It was like, you did this move or that. That didn't matter to me because I wasn't going to impress him with that.
Talk about late night sessions. I remember so many with Roger Clouse also, and staying up until dawn. And we a lot of times never broke out a deck of cards, but we just told jokes and talked about family things like you're talking about and stories and whatnot. Because a lot of things that magicians do today in sessions are just as you're talking about, where it's like you're just doing card tricks and teaching somebody else. And you get inundated with so much, you're lucky if you remember one of them the next day. Whereas that you remember the stories and the jokes and everything, which are more important because that makes your relationship so much deeper with each other, to become a better friend. And also some of the jokes you're telling could be used in your show later.
Absolutely. No. Mm-hmm. And you know, Johnny never shied away from it. I mean, you know, his career, he bankrupted. I mean, he put his whole show out there several times.
Like Mark Wilson.
Yeah. And Johnny Carson's manager was, you know, worked with him and, he had to go to Europe and make the money back to pay back the mob. Because some of the money was from the
mob. Borrowed from them? Ooh.
Yeah, well, he sure did. Yeah, and he had to go and he had to
high interest loans?
Yeah, and he had to pay that money back. And he says, "I'm not going to put myself in a bind." And he went, that's when he did went to Europe and he worked for a year or so to pay all that debt off. Mm-hmm. So he knew he was from the old school. He paid, when he played, he paid. You know, he was good. He was an honorable human being.
He really was.
Funny thing about Johnny was an atheist.
Yeah.
And he didn't make any qualms about it. And I'm not. You know, as a believer, I'm not. We never once had an argument. Now, he might have said to some friends back behind, you know, I don't agree with them, but we loved each other.
Banachek's same way. Banachek's an atheist, and he and I have been best friends, and we know where each other stand, and we're not trying to proselytize the other.
No. Mm-hmm. And I respect him, and he respected me, and we never pushed it out. But, you know, it's just it's a great example of how two people from completely different belief backgrounds can still find that one quality in its magic.
Similar with politics, I think. Politics and religion are a couple of things that are really off the magic table whenever that you're together and talking with each other, for the most part, that you want to have something that you have other things in common. And if you don't have those things, like, okay, we won't discuss that. It's not like necessarily a marriage, because in a marriage, you have to kind of be on board and sync with each other. But as a magician, you're not living with the person 24/7 like you would with a spouse. You can kind of overlook some things where you have disagreements.
Sure.
So I'm just telling those who listen, don't discount someone's opinion just because that they have a different belief system or viewpoint than you do.
Yeah, we have magic in common.
There you go.
There's guys that politically don't agree with me, and I don't get on there anymore.
That's my point.
I don't do it. I just don't do it because it's not worth the friendship.
Speaking of the social media, that Johnny told you to get off also, didn't
he? Oh, yeah. He used to tell me, yell. There was several guys I won't mention that he used to yell at and say, get off that thing. And then he told me, he said, if you're going to be on it, don't discuss religion, don't discuss with me. And I
never did.
I heated that. I did, because I used to get involved with it. And then I thought, you know what?
It's a promotional tool.
It is. And it doesn't matter. I don't want to be perceived as a bully, and I don't want to be perceiving those people as a bully to me.
Yeah.
So we don't talk about that stuff. I see it. I go past it. And that's a great clue. You don't want to offend. Now I can't, because I've got a lot of, quote, I guess, for lack of a better term, fans that follow me. I have a fan page, but people that follow me anyway, and so I don't want to hurt them.
No.
You know?
No. Exactly right.
But I will say, in segueing to that, social media, I have learned, is a tremendous, tremendous tool, especially for what I'm doing now, and I've never had to use it before. But now I have to rely on it.
How do you do this? What do you do in order to promote your shows?
I'm learning this. Well, Facebook, butts in Instagram.
Seats. I mean, now you've got a one-man show.
Oh, wow.
I want to talk a little bit about that then also, that you have been developing this one-man show. It's something you've had in mind for a long time.
Yeah.
And I was talking with Dal Sanders the other night, who saw your show with me, and he and I agree that you found your chi, you found your place, where that you're good with large groups, but you're at your best when it's an intimate setting.
You know, I've had clients tell me that for years. They go, you know, Dave, I love the big stuff, but when you clear the table and we're in a private room for dinner and it's 20 of us or whatever it means,
it's just you and me. It's kind of
I can look in their faces, and credit where credit is due. Steve Cohen, and I know there was some before, but Steve Cohen in our time, just absolutely, I have such an amazing, much more amazing respect. I've always respected what he did.
Sure.
But I now have a much more, a greater respect for he, for Steve that does up in Boston. Crowd offer. He and the other, I can't remember the gentleman's name.
I know, Steve Cadolfo. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I have called him. I've talked to Steve. I have talked to Paul Gertner, who has a one-man show in Boston. I've talked Cozy, one of my dear, wonderful friends. My inspiration to get in magic, Paul Kozak. One of the finest guys in our business.
Yeah.
A renaissance man that really reinvents himself. He's taught me that. Mm-hmm. He's helped me out. Mike Hammer, who is a dear friend, has taught me so much stuff on tickets. Helped me with my tick app.
Yeah,
and I've never done this before. I have an all new respect. I would show up at the conference, the convention, at the ballroom, at the hotel, or where in Vegas, wherever. I do my show, do a sound check, do my show, get my props off, and go home.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this is a Barbara and I for an 8 o'clock show. We'll get to the Fort Worth Club at 4 o'clock. We start setting up, doing the sound, checking everything, setting the whole room, the furniture, everything.
Right.
She puts things on the seats. It's all social distance. She's wiping everything down. She's so thoughtful about all that. Biggest compliment that we've gotten that makes me feel good is hearing people, first of all, go, you're just amazing. You get past that.
Sure, yeah.
You're incredible. You're, we all hear that.
Yeah.
Is thank you so much for making me feel comfortable and safe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's so great to hear. And we hear it now all the time.
Mm-hmm.
4 feet between, 6 feet. Mm-hmm. And we stay back. I come out and I wear, you saw the mask that I wear, which is really nice, the little plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it off at one point because then I knew at the end I was 6 feet away from the audience. I wasn't going to be with them again. So, but
the intimacy that you have,
that
you still use a microphone, as we were talking about also, that Steve Cohen doesn't use a mic, and he has a small group then also. But even so, I think by using the microphone and speaker system, which you're using Anchor speaker system,
Anchors,
I think, that which you'd use in trade shows,
you said,
now you're using it then again, has multiple uses, is something that is just a little bit more that seems to make your show, I think, even that much more professional because people don't have to turn to each other and say, what did he say?
Well, I worried about this. And this happened when I was at Steve's show. And I don't slight Steve on it. Steve projects well.
Yeah.
It works for him.
Yeah.
So, but I did have a guy behind me several times that day in the show saying, what did he say? That went past me.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself right then, wow, maybe I can't carry my voice.
But
when I was thinking about it back then.
But you've learned in radio, of course, how to, first of all,
project
and to speak slow enough.
Sure.
So that way the people can understand.
Absolutely.
And when you're speaking into a microphone, you have to be even more conscientious about the speed of your talk.
And that's right. And Steve is very articulate.
Yes, he is.
When you hear him, he's a very intellectual gentleman, mm-hmm. and he's very precise. So his words come out, and they do float well. He projects.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to make sure it didn't. If I get somebody with a hearing aid in the back.
You never know. And that's
You don't know.
It could be in the back. That's right.
And so I want to make sure they can hear me. It's not real loud.
No.
So we do an introduction, have music then, during when they're coming in, kind of jazz.
That adds a lot, I believe, as well, by having that where you're going to be saying that it's going to start in 15 minutes, the bar will close in 10 minutes, you got time or whatever.
That's my guy, Gary Lee Love, who's the Hall of Fame from Beaumont.
Oh.
He's still on the radio.
Okay.
Got that real deep voice.
He does have a great voice.
And then when he does the intro, you know, and I think it's good to build up because it separates you. So I come out of the area and yeah, it's great. I'm loving the show.
So you prefer not socializing with a group beforehand, so that's why you're going to be kind of a surprise behind the screen.
Yeah, I stand behind the deal.
Okay.
And also, I'm back there while Barbara is getting everybody in their seats.
Sure.
And I'm hitting the little deal on the computer that says, and the bar, ladies and gentlemen, the bar will be closing in 10 minutes.
Okay. But when you do close-up in conjunction with a show, obviously they have seen you, but you still, I guess, will go back after you've done the close-up, and then they're going to be going into another room. You're kind of getting ready and prepared, and you're out of sight. You still.
And then I come in, and everybody, and I'm saying, hey, folks, I'm so glad you're here. So this, as Al says, this is where nightmares begin.
Do you prefer that? Doing close-up first, so this way that they know you personally?
No, we do a thing called a VIP upgrade.
Okay.
For instance, in the dinner show, Tyler, it's a $150 ticket. They get the meal and they get the show. My partners and I just split it.
Yeah.
And they take care of the host, brings them down to the Cellar Theater. We do the show for 38 to 40 people there. It has smaller social distance.
And it's a 70-minute show.
About 70 minutes, mm-hmm. And after that, the people all exit out. The 10 people, we only allow 10 to do upgrades to $200 for a VIP, VIP up close. They go out and get the drink there, and the other people leave, and those two people come back into the out of the curtain area, and we've got the table set up.
Drinks included, or is that a cash bar?
Oh, no, that's
bar?
An extra. That's okay. A cash bar. They get drinks upstairs with the dinner,
okay.
And wines, they have pairings.
Yeah. But for the $200, that extra $50 they're paying, they just get what?
They get the 15-minute close-up show,
okay.
VIP.
Okay.
So it's a meet and greet.
Yes.
But like if it was a meet and greet with Garth Brooks, he wouldn't sit back there and play the guitar and do private songs
okay,
for you.
Good point.
I want to perform for
him. Yeah.
It's just I'm nobody to meet and greet. Not, you know. So my meet and greet is they get to perform. So we have them socially, you know, around five
separated.
How many
close-up tricks would you do in a 15-minute set?
Because
you
I
have
do,
quite an interesting personality.
Yeah, I talk a lot.
Engaging. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do one. I tell stories and they absolutely love it.
So like three tricks and
you're... No, I do one... Two, three, four or five,
okay.
Four or five, maybe okay. Four. Because if you'll think about it, and this is a buddy of mine, Jeremy Newton, used to say all the time, he says, when he went to my show, it was an hour show, he says, You only did four things.
I know. I remember talking to Fielding so many years ago, and he said, what's in your show? And I said, I've got this. And he said, yeah, and then this and this. And before long, he's kind of staggering back. I said, how long is your show? Because He said, I've only got like, what, four or five things in an hour, and I listed like 15 or something.
But you hear the stories and the engagement that
yes,
I do.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I want to make it personal. And they're all involved. That's why I came with the name of The Experience. Because I tell them that too.
The Dave McGee
experience.
You're going
to do everything. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you drive home tonight, you're going to sit back and realize he was kind of just the facilitator of everything.
Mm-hmm.
He recorded the things, but we made all the choices. We did, which is the same with any magic show.
Yeah.
But I'm just reiterating that to
That's
him.
That's right. That's right. I think that is something that a lot of mentalists in particular don't do, and that is another thing that they could or should, we should do perhaps, and that is of reiterating and reminding people what it is they did so that you can create those false memories in some cases, of course.
Yes.
So this way that you're going to say, now you shuffle the deck and just remind them what they did to begin with. So that way when they go back home, has been
several
obfuscated.
Times. Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing I think you noticed in Dow too, that were there, my mentalism is very, very different in that I'll tell you the greatest example. A guy came up to me, and one time I was doing a show in New York. This guy came up to me. It was a corporate deal. And he said, man, I never seen anything like this, you know. And I said, well, thanks. He goes, I got to tell you, you know what really got me? I've seen mentalists before, but they're real serious.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to believe they were reading mine. He goes, I think you really did. He goes, that's the only thing I got. But he says, can I tell you, and don't be offended, but it was kind of like Gomer Pyle. And all of a sudden, now you just come in and knock us out. But like with these other guys from New York, it's like they're already real gruff and everything, and they knock you out. You know, you expect it.
Yeah.
But you didn't see it coming with you.
So it's kind of like a Matt King, who is kind of like a country bumpkin kind of
a
character.
Way, but
it's
I don't
like,
do
wow,
that
what did he do?
Country character.
No, I understand. But he's saying he has a character,
oh,
which
yeah.
did you have, yes.
Well, you see a lot of facial with me.
Yes, that's
a lot
right.
Of stuff.
You have a lot of good mugging and everything where you turn to the audience and raise your eyebrows without having to say, this guy's a nut.
Yeah.
You know, you got those Rodney Dangerfield kind
feel
of.
Good.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that was another thing is that I enjoyed how that you did not, when someone does something stupid, you didn't have to say it. Everyone realized that.
No.
And so you'll say, well, those things happen. Don't
and
worry
then
about
patted
it.
Them on the
it's
back.
Like my bad. I didn't explain that properly.
Yeah,
and so I thought that was very well handled.
Yeah, I want them to feel good. I don't ever want because I start off by saying, folks, listen. If you'll want to be involved, I promise you. If you don't want, just tell me and I'll go to somebody else. But I promise, if you do, you'll be sorry because it's a great experience to feel it.
Yeah,
and they live vicariously through you. And besides, I said you're not going to get up. You're my guest. I'm not going to make a fool out of anybody. I've been doing this 25 years. I find most people do that on their own.
And you said that right up front in the very thing. So everyone, they do laugh. And that way they know they're in for a good time.
Exactly.
And a good ride.
And then I kind of grab a line from Lance that I asked him years ago if I could do. And he was kind of saying, and I said, I say, I don't make a fool. And I find most people do that on their own. I look at somebody drinking and I go, have another drink.
Yes.
You
that's
know?
Right. Yeah.
And I kind of laugh at them. And so it's, I want it to be humorous. And this is the thing. I start off my show, and you heard it. I don't read minds. I'm not a psychic. I don't have ESP, and I don't talk to dead people that have crossed over to the other side.
Right.
What I'm using is physiology. So I create that, like Banachek kind of said, that sixth sense.
Sixth
I don't
sense.
Say
right.
it.
Right.
But Johnny was always very strong to me saying, don't ever lie to people and tell them you're going to read their mind.
Well, and that was, I think, one of the stronger things also when you were telling about this guy who was a quarterback in the NFL. And everybody was going, wow. And you say,
Folks. That was great. So I'll tell the listeners don't know.
Yeah.
So there's a guy there, and a buddy of mine had told me, look him up. He says he bought tickets. He's a friend of ours. And he's in his 70s. Yeah. And this guy was in the NFL and played for three major teams, and his father was a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And they are the first, and they hold this as a record, the first father and son, right?
Quarterbacks.
So we all know that now most guys are thinking with the electronics and stuff nowadays that these psychic talking to dead people.
They've got something in their ear.
Well, that when they see who's coming to the show, they look them up and get information on them and all that stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we know that happens. So I get all this. I say, sir, I got to ask you something. I'm using you for this, but I got a funny feeling. Are you into sports? The guy, oh, yeah. And I went, he's a gentle giant. You know, I said, did you football? And he goes, yeah. I said, you didn't just watch it. You played it. And he saw how reluctant. He went, yeah.
Yeah.
And I said,
he didn't want to talk
about
it.
He was like, how did you know that? And I say, I keep on going. In fact, I'm getting a feeling you got a record or something, right? He goes, yeah, kind of. And I explain the whole thing. And people are sitting gasping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? They're just going nuts. Now, most of the guys would walk away and take credit for that.
Yeah.
That's what they want you to know.
Right.
I turned to the first guy in the front that was kind of Robert, that guy that night that was a little bit slow.
Yeah.
And I said, Robert. And he was like, how did you do that? Like, you know, you could tell in his face. I looked at him. I said, freak you out too? And he goes, yeah. And I said, yeah. I said, it's amazing. I said, it's great when you know people have bought tickets and you get their name and you can look them up. I said, wouldn't mind reading. I looked at him. I said, Google, and a crowd just dies. But what you've done
is you
blew their mind, but you kind of let them inside to say, see, he told us he's not real. But then they come up to you after the show, because here's the psychology of that. The guys or men are coming, women are coming up, and they go, I don't care what you said. You had free minds. There's no other explanation for that.
Because there are other things you did.
Now they're telling you. It's reverse psychology.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of like, was it Anneman or Dunninger, I think, who had come out famously like with a set of linking rings and say, well, some magicians use one that's got this hook cut in it. I don't use that. And then he proceeded to use.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the same kind of thing that you can, after you've discarded that, it's like, okay, well, he's let us in on the, and it's kind of funny. And yeah, but then if you could use this later, they're still blown away by it.
Yeah. Just, they're leveled.
Yeah.
You know? So the greatest compliment is that they come up and they say to you, I know what you said at the beginning. I don't know how you do it, but it must be, because I give them outs and stuff, talk about NLP and, you know, Emerson wrote The Eyes Are a Window of the Soul. 87% of what we do is nonverbal.
Yeah.
The tongue can lie, but the body, it's incapable of lying.
Yeah.
I said, so I'm just reading people. And it's not 100%. Yeah. Johnny did give me this one thing, and this is, we've heard this. He always said, it's not bad if you miss a little bit, you know,
it's like
if the
juggler
word was
dropping,
slavery was one of, you know, in the flashback books. And if sometimes you get that, I'll get like bondage. Mm-hmm. I'll say bond or something. I'll go, oh, it's close. And now they walk away and go, it wasn't 100%.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's close enough.
Close enough.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you plan on doing this one-man show into the future?
Well, I'm going to tell you.
More casinos, you think, as far as long-term?
I told my business partner, I said, I love it, and I'll keep doing the ones. But
you said
this
is very hard.
It's very hard. I mean, it is very, very. You had a young man on your deal here that's doing it in Houston.
Mm-hmm. Ben Jackson. Doing a great job, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Ben today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk to him. He's a younger guy, but you can learn from everybody.
Yeah. Same with him. When he was on an episode previous on the Magic Word, he was talking about having talked with Dennis Watkins and Steve Cohen and all these other guys who were doing one-man shows.
And they were so gracious, and I want to thank those people, all of them, and for helping me, because they've really opened my eyes. But I'm going to tell you, it is probably in my business of what I've done, probably. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I'm 60 years old now. Probably the hardest thing I've ever done.
Harder than trade shows.
Oh, by far, the stress. And I'll tell you why, Scott.
Good point. Because you're on your feet for 8 hours a day but that's different than the 1 hour that you're doing here.
But I know I'm going to be there the next day and work and getting paid.
That's
Here's the thing. I get 50 seats at the Adolphus. Right now, the show is this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we've got 32 tickets sold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got to sell 20-something tickets. I got to get on the phone. I got to start talking to social media. I got to do a boost. And you wake up every day with this. And I don't like it. So I'm going to trim back to only doing during this COVID. Because a friend of mine said the other day, he's a marketer. He goes, Dave, I'm going to tell you, you're going to lose 75% of your potential right now because people are scared to come out.
When Jamie Salinas and I had our Top Talent Productions and we did monthly shows in Houston, we kind of sweated it out too. And it was literally within the last 3 days that people started buying tickets.
Yes.
And so it's like Magic Conventions also, who are people working with the convention committee to try to get registrations up. And it's not until the last minute that everybody decides to come. But you're wondering, oh my gosh, we're going to lose so much money. And then all of a sudden, everybody shows up. So it's one of those build it and they will come some kind of a things. But they need to know about your show. And then, this, like with Steve Cohen, obviously it's become word of mouth kind of a thing. I don't think he does a whole lot of advertising. And maybe at this point in his life.
Oh, but, and Steve will tell you, though. He told me, he said, Dave, in the early year, I was living on adrenaline.
Oh, yeah.
And now I know what he meant. Because God bless him. I mean, he deserves everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan White's the same way. I'm hearing these tickets sell like this. And how is that possible?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been on The Tonight Show a whole bunch, and that doesn't hurt.
Having that kind of
promotion. That's great. Good for him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I got to the point in my life where it's like, kudos to these guys.
Well, that's the thing. You know, again, at your age of 60 years old, how many more years do you really want to beat your head up against the wall?
So you want to know what my plan is?
I do want to know what your plan is.
Okay, here's my plan. A couple of things, I'm not going to get political or anything, but a couple of things will make my mind up real quick for me in the next month or so.
Okay.
But I'll either stay and do another 4 years, and I think I'll do this stuff, the one-man shows mostly, and the casino stuff. But I really want to focus on getting these things set up with either the Fort Worth Club or the Adolphus, one of the two, or one place and stay there and do a couple.
Yeah, have a residency more or less.
Yeah, have a residency, And by then, it'll take... I'm thinking, well, after COVID, people will be ready to get out, and they'll already have heard about it.
Yeah.
I want to check this out. Or at the first of the year, we are going to sell everything and move down our place in Cancun, in a gated community, 8 minutes away from the Grand Moon Palace, which is Mr. Chapur's property. He has five of them. Half the island.
Well, it's kind of like what Dave Hyrie did as he moved to, was it Costa Rica?
Dave went to Costa Rica, but he's pretty much retired.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's what I'm going to say. So are you going down to retire?
Oh, no. They want to talk. They want me to be a consultant. That had been there last year. They want me to be consult with them on some theater stuff to MC and bring in a show, build a show.
Yeah.
But I also can work their five places and do a show each night, a 45-minute show, almost in all international. Mm-hmm. They do five shows a week.
Yeah.
45 minutes each. They only want 45 minutes to an hour because they want them out on the property.
Of course.
So, and they're usually crowds from anywhere from 300 to 500.
That'd be fun. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice kind of semi-retirement to kind of
go off
into the sun, almost literally.
Listen. Oh, really? And go off into the sun. That's right. And just live there, enjoy our life, live like kings.
Yeah.
I've got so many wonderful friends. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I've got so many friends now that live there. Sebastian, my friend that does a fantastic job. Fernando, who is a mentalist. And you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to work with those guys and help them and develop their characters and develop them. Because, you know, that's the one thing I learned from Johnny.
Like with Johnny, right.
I want to give back. It's really important. Look what Paul and Cohen and those guys. What a great, kind thing to do to give back their time to me to help me at this time in my life even.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm very grateful for them, what they did.
Well, in that regard, let me start to wrap up over here. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I always like to close by asking, what is your philosophy of life? What are your words? What's your magic word? And
you know what? That's bizarre because it's changed.
Yeah.
I've had a gruff side to me for a lot of years. I'm 6'3". You know, I was in the ball when I was young and stuff, and I wasn't your typical magician. I don't know what, I mean, I say a typical magician, you know, it's kind of sometimes, I guess, you know, stereotypical, and we didn't fit in or other thing. It was kind of different for me. And I got into it late in life in 20s. I saw Paul Kozak and I turned to my then wife, I was engaged to, fiance. And I said, that's what I want to do the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And then I went to work marketing and got after that 8 years. I went to her one day and said, I'm done. I'm going to do what I said I want to do. And she supported me, and I went from there. And so I think my magic word would be reinvention.
Mm-hmm.
I have reinvented myself so many times.
So don't worry about
reinventing. It's like plastic surgery. I don't recognize me anymore. No, started off in restaurants, went from restaurants to doing corporate, low corporate stuff, bigger corporate stuff, got into radio. Had the largest live interactive comedy feature in the history of any radio, live, not being recorded.
But did you feel like that you kind of evolved to that, or that was a goal? Or
no, they weren't goals. None of these things were goals. I'm not smart enough to set goals. I really am not.
That's
these are things I'm blessed. These were blessings. You know, and I don't want to get far off to the woods and people start rolling their eyeballs at me. I don't really care anymore. But I believe this was all set for me. I mean, it was all, you know.
So even at this age, you don't mind reinventing yourself. So it's important what you're saying is to don't worry about
nothing
reinventing yourself.
Chance. No. I mean,
nothing is by chance.
Yeah, nothing is by chance. I believe this.
Was chance. It wasn't your goal. It wasn't something that you.
Yeah, I know you can say that. But I mean, like I said, not to get into the weeds of anything. Yeah. I believe a lot of this stuff was just, you know, laid out ahead of time, ordained for me. It was meant to be. I just kind of follow that path.
Let it roll.
Yeah, let it roll.
Yeah.
I follow that path and let that direction take me. You know,
go where it guides you.
Yeah.
Let it roll and let it go where it guides you. Okay,
yeah.
I like
and
that.
And so that's what it is. So I've learned to reinvent myself. Don't stay stagnant. And even Johnny said, look, Johnny, Harmonic Cats, acting. He's done it all. That's why he was a general practitioner, which, by the way, I will say this. The new general practitioner, I've told you this in our business, and people are going to know it sooner or later, but it's a gentleman by the name of Charlie Fry. Mm-hmm. And you know something I learned? These great guys, Johnny with Pam, you with Kathy, me with Barbara.
You got a woman behind
Charlie
you.
Charlie with Sherry. Sherry, yeah. Let me tell you, they are a magnificent team. Two of the finest people that you will ever meet in your entire life.
Oh, yeah. I love
sweet
them.
People and talented clown, magic,
juggling,
entertain. They've done. Everything. I see these people that are diversified. That's my word. Diversified.
Okay.
No, really, diversifying. That's my word. I want to change it from reinventing to diversified.
Okay.
The real successful ones are diversified. They can go. Michelle wanted me to be a game show host. I almost missed that opportunity and said, no, I'm a mentalist. Mm-hmm. She put me in front of 3,000 people. Then we worked mentalism and entertainment into it.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing VIP shows for those people because they know me as a mentalist.
That's great. Well, Dave, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Wonderful. This has been a.
I hope you had a good breakfast.
I thank you for breakfast. That was good breakfast burritos you prepared over there. Good little chef.
See, I'm diversified. I could become a chef at the Waffle House any day.
There you go. So with the Magic Word Podcast, so that was Dave McGee. This is Scotty out. Thanks, Dave, for being on this episode, and it was a joy to catch up with you and to talk about a lot of really things that you're passionate about, and that passion certainly comes through, and a lot of really great lessons that you shared with us here today. Thank you again very much, and I hope that you, the listener, got a lot out of this as well. I just love talking to this guy. He just seems to be so full of knowledge and lots of good ideas, and anyhow, thanks again, Dave, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in to listen to this episode, and as a reminder that if you have not yet subscribed to the Pod Letter, please do. If you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there should be a pop-up coming up on your screen, and it will ask if you want to subscribe to the Pod Letter, and there you just put in your name and email, and each Thursday morning, whenever that these new podcasts are released, that you will receive this Pod Letter that will tell you about who's on this week, who's coming up next week, and some suggestions from the archives, and also about any contests we're running. Speaking of which, we have a contest running for one more week, and that is the e-books that have been offered by Romani. We had her on as our guest last week for episode number 592, and she had offered us three free e-books, and because they're e-books, they obviously can be sent digitally anywhere in the world. And so if you can legally enter a contest in your state or country or wherever you reside, that you can enter this contest and maybe lucky enough to be one of the names that are randomly drawn. So just go to themagicwordpodcast.com to this week's episode or to last week's episode and fill in the form there on the website. And again, while you're there, go ahead and subscribe to the Pod Letter. I think that you will be glad you did. And if you're going to be buying anything from Amazon, you can always help us through their affiliate program. At the bottom of every page of the website, there is a graphic there. When you click on that, that will take you to your Amazon page and or to your account. And then whatever you order, we get a little bit of help thanks to Mr. Bezos. Doesn't come out of your money. Comes out of his pocket, not yours. So anyhow, we've got a lot of really exciting episodes coming up that will take us through episode number 600 and beyond. We have several that are in the can, so to speak, and you need to come back to find out who these are going to be, or you subscribe to Pod Letter and find out who some of these are then as well. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to diversify. Don't be afraid to reinvent yourself. This is Scotty out.